The Gary Knoll Show, daily at noon on the Progressive Radio Network.
Live from New York City, it's The Gary Knoll Show. And now, your host, Gary Knoll.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll. Nice to have you with us, broadcasting live from our studios in New York City. This is the Empowerment Hour. I can promise you we will share insights today that will allow you to make more reasoned choices in your life. Today, we have an absolutely packed hour. The probability is we won't get everyone or everything in, but we'll try. What I don't get in at this hour, at our sister station, WPFW, in the afternoon, I'll continue on. I'm going to talk today about how the 10 food additives we should not have because they're dangerous. How starving a little bit actually sharpens your brain. Also, a special commentary from Chris Hedges. Hope, real hope, is about doing something. And I know that many of you in this audience are doers. And I know others of you would like to do something, but maybe you're thinking, well, I don't know what to do. I don't know what risks I would take if I did something. I don't want to be on anyone's radar and have anyone question me about anything. I understand that. After you hear this commentary, you might think again. From our environmental section today, the big biofuel delusion, why biofuels are actually causing more people to suffer from food limitations and cost more for the foods that we are eating, and why it's not a good source of energy, even though it's been sold as that. Let's go to the latest in health nutrition, and then you're going to hear from some interesting people. I have a whole lot of people lined up who have all used various holistic protocols to get themselves healthy. Some are my own. Some are Dr. Howard Robbins, who's sitting here in the studio with me in New York City. And we will talk with these individuals and hear from them. I have not spoken with any of them. I don't like to talk with any guests prior to going on the air. I find that it's better to have that edge. Let's begin. You know that I'm a big believer in vitamin D and that we should be having more of it in our diet and getting good quality sunshine. Here's one more reason. This is from the U.S. National Health and Nutrition Examination Survey, published in the International Archives of Medicine. It says low vitamin D increases your risk of depression. And knowing at this time that more and more people are depressed, but not because of brain chemical imbalances and not needing tranquilizers or anti-anxiety medication, which last night while I was sitting there and editing, I had the ball game on in the background, and there was an ad. And I'm listening to the side effects. How about death as a side effect? I don't care how depressed you are, death is not an option. But when you take those antidepressant medications, you increase your risk of suicidal thoughts or suicidal actions. Now, if you just had vitamin D, I'm suggesting 2,000 units a day, that can make a difference. A lot of people think that rye bread is nothing more than wheat bread with some coloring added to it, and indeed much of it is. But there's also the whole grain rye bread, and it has a different quality to it. And this study looked at different breads to see which are best. And this was done in Finland, and another study was done in Sweden at the university. Here's what they found. Rye whole grain bread and whole bran are substantially better than the wheat that you get in regular bread. In fact, it decreases urinary C-peptides, plasma insulin levels, and prostate-specific antigen, PSA, in men with prostate cancer. So here's what this means in lay language. If you're a man over the age of 50, you're probably having some experience with enlarged prostate. That does not mean you're going to have prostate cancer. If you went to whole grains, all types of whole grains, that can make an enormous difference and help you. So no longer eat the white bread, no longer eat regular bread in restaurants. Get the, I suggest Ezekiel is a good one, Sprouted is a good one. Okay, that's what that says, and that's good. A big nutrient is resveratrol. One more reason to take it. This is a major study published in the Journal of Nutrition, and it says that resveratrol protects against oxidized LDL. This is the title of the actual article. Quote, breakage of the blood-brain barrier by lessening disruption of tight junctions and apoptotic insults to mouse cerebrovascular endothelial cells. That's what I read. Man, is that... But I read these articles so that you're getting cutting-edge material, not the filtered information you get in the news media. Lay language. The meaning of this. And this was done at the Department of Anesthesiology, the Graduate Institute of Medical Sciences, College of Medicine, Taipei Medical University. It means that when you take in resveratrol, I'm suggesting 100 to 200 milligrams a day. And of course that comes from grapes. You get it if you eat the grapes or drink grape juice or grape concentrate, you even get more. Red wine, you get less. But what it does, it reduces the oxidation, the damage in your brain. And that's good. So as long as you do not have oxidative stress in your brain cells will not die in the same way they would otherwise. But the moment you have alcohol, you flood the brain with free radicals and oxidative stress. The heart, the liver, and the kidneys. You lose about 1 million cells every time you have hard alcohol. Just remember that. You can say, well, what's the big deal? I have 1 billion brain cells, hundreds of billions of brain cells. Yes, that's correct. But that's also why you get dementia, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, ALS. All these neurological and brain dysfunction are frequently starting with stress, oxidative stress. So resveratrol helps trap those free radicals and neutralize them. Now, knowing that something is bad gives us freedom of choice. We can either use it or not. Here are 10 food additives I would hope that you would not use. Artificial sweeteners. I'm opposed to aspartame. You also might know it as NutraSweet or Equal. It's in a lot of the sugar-free foods, and it's in most of the sugar-free or zero-calorie soft drinks. And it is not healthy. It does produce neurotoxic effects, dizziness, headaches, mental confusion, migraines, and seizures. It is very bad if you have asthma or hay fever. And you find it in baked goods, gums, chewing gums, gelatin. And also it's been linked to cancer of the kidneys. Stay away from it. High fructose corn syrup. It's a refined sweetener. It's become the number one source of calories in the United States. It's in virtually all processed foods. And it's bad because it increases the bad LDL cholesterol levels. It can contribute to diabetes, tissue damage, macular degeneration. And you're going to find it in everything from breads and candies and flavored yogurts to salad dressings and canned vegetables. Next up, monosodium glutamate. The other night, I dropped by a vegan restaurant in New York City. And I was looking at the menu, and I saw an awful lot of processed soy products. And I asked them, have you watched this being made? Do you make this on premises? No, we get it in. Anytime you see a processed soy isolate, you know that they use MSG. Oh, I didn't know that. Well, they do. So any item you bring in, you should know how it's made. So I don't use any of the processed soy foods. That way you're not getting MSG. MSG is an amino acid, and it's used as a flavoring enhancer. Historically, you would get it mainly when you had soy sauce, but you can get it in a wide variety of products. You can get it salad dressing and potato chips and frozen entrees. a lot of restaurant foods, it gives an extra taste to the food. What it is an excitotoxin. It overexcites the cells to the point where they literally die. You can overexcite brain cells to destroy the neuron. And it can cause all forms of adverse effects, fatigue, headaches. So stay away from it. Trans fats, another thing we don't want in our diet. They use it simply to extend the shelf life of products. It's dangerous. It will increase your cholesterol level. It will increase your risk of heart attack and strokes. And it is a massive problem for inflammation in the body. Arthritis, bursitis, fibromyalgia, diabetes. That's what a trans fat does. Don't use any common food dyes. You'll find them in sodas and fruit juices and salad dressings. They are linked to behavioral difficulty in children, and they've been known to reduce IQs. Also, in animal studies, they were shown to be associated with cancer. The worst ones, blue number one and blue number two. And by the way, isn't it interesting? Norway bans them, Finland bans them, France bans them. Why? Because their scientists showed it destroys chromosomes. We don't ban it. Red number three and red number 40. Again, it can come in the cosmetics. And yellow number 6. Then you have sodium sulfite. It's a preservative, and where do you find it? Wines and processed cheeses. And you can have a lot of people who have serious lung problems if they have that sulfite, and it causes severe headaches also. And then sodium nitrite and sodium nitrate, you get that in hamburgers, hot dogs, corn, beef, bacon. You don't want it. BHA and BHT, butylated hydroxyanisole. They're preservatives. Chewing gum, cereals, potato chips, soups, oils. Very bad, causes cancer. Sulfur dioxide. And sulfur dioxide is not good. And it can cause asthma, bronchitis. Found in a lot of beer and soft drinks. And also in your, if you look at any dried fruit, let's say you had some dried peaches, pineapple, papaya, and they looked natural in color, it's sulfur dioxide, don't use them. They should be brown. That's because of oxidation. It will not adversely affect or decrease phytonutrients. Phytonutrients are not affected by drying, but it will affect some of the antioxidants, but so little it's insignificant. But you get something that is kind of soft and natural color, that's sulfur dioxide. Stay away from it. And finally, potassium bromate. It increases the volume in flour and breads and rolls and buns, and it causes cancer in animals. So that is your consumer report of the day. I'm Gary Nall. This is the one place in all of radio where progressive and independent minds come together to learn about the world and health. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. To welcome all of you, I'm Gary Nall. And if sometime you miss a show, not to worry. We archive ours within an hour. You can go to either GaryNall.com on the internet, as thousands of people every day do, and go to the archives, or go to Progressive Radio Network and look at the archives. This way, you can listen to the programs anytime you want. I do 15 hours of live broadcasting a week, so in a big six-hour show every Wednesday morning on our KPFK sister station in Los Angeles. I'm sure you are, at some point in your life, have been faced with the idea, when do you stand up? When do you actually stand up and say, I'm going to face an issue because I believe in it? Maybe it's the ending the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan and standing up against the way our food has been adulterated or the way that we have been manipulated in bailing out the banks and financial institutions, but not the average person. There are hundreds of institutional failures where the paradigm itself has failed to address our authentic needs. If no one stood up and said what you're doing is wrong, it's either immoral, unethical, illegal, then they'll continue doing it. And right now they're doing it. And so at some point we say, well, shouldn't there be hope? We hear the politicians talking about hope. Those poor teabag people, their anger was legitimate, but how they went about expressing it was not. They put people in office who actually were contributing to the problems and will align themselves with a corporate interest that will make it even worse, and that's the bad part of it. And a lot of people chose not to do anything, say anything, as if somehow the world is going to be a better place tomorrow because talking heads want it to be that way. Keep hope alive. Tomorrow will be a better day. No, it won't. It will not. It cannot, as long as we stay silent. Thank goodness we have Chris Hedges, who has found the voice, in my opinion, the most articulate in America today. Hope does not mean we will halt the firing in Afghanistan of the next Hellfire missile, whose explosive blast sucks the oxygen out of the air and leaves the dead, including children, scattered like limp rag dolls on the ground. Hope does not mean we will reform Wall Street swindlers and speculators or halt the pillaging of our economy as we print $600 billion in new money with the desperation of a collapsing state. Hope does not mean that the nation's ministers and rabbis, who know the words of the great Hebrew prophets, will leave their houses of worship to practice the religious beliefs they preach. Let's be honest. Most clerics like fine, abstract words about justice and full collection plates, but know little of real hope. Hope knows that unless we physically defy government control, we are complicit in the violence of the state. All who resist keep hope alive. All who succumb to fear, despair, and apathy become enemies of hope. They become, in their passivity, agents of injustice. If the enemies of hope are finally victorious, the poison of violence will become not only the language of power, but the language of opposition. And those who resist with nonviolence are in times like these the thin line of defense between a civil society and its disintegration. Hope has a cost. Hope is not comfortable. Hope is not easy. Hope requires personal risk. Hope does not come with the right attitude. Hope is not about peace of mind. Hope is about action. Hope is doing something. The more futile, the more useless, the more irrelevant and incomprehensible an act of rebellion is, the vaster and the more potent hope becomes. Hope never makes sense. Hope is weak, unorganized, and absurd. Hope, which is always nonviolent, exposes in its powerlessness the lies, the fraud, the coercion employed by the state. Hope does not believe in force. Hope knows that an injustice visited on our neighbor is an injustice visited on us all. Hope posits that people are drawn to the good by the good. This is the secret of hope's power, and it is why it can never finally be defeated. Hope demands of others what we demand for ourselves. Hope does not separate us from them. Hope sees our enemy in our own face. Hope is not for the practical and the sophisticated, the cynics and the complacent, the egotist, the elitist, the dilettantes, the dandies, the defeated and the fearful. Hope is what the corporate state, which saturates our airways with lies, seeks to obliterate. Hope is what our corporate overlords are determined to crush. Be afraid, they tell us. Surrender your liberties to us, so we can make the world safer from terror. Don't resist. Embrace the alienation of our cheerful conformity. Buy our products. Without them, you're worthless. Become our brand names. Do not look up from your electronic hallucinations to think. No, above all, do not think. Just obey. The powerful do not understand hope. Hope is not a part of their vocabulary. They speak in the cold, dead words of national security, gold markets, global markets, electoral strategy, staying on message, image, and money. The powerful protect their own. They divide the world into the damned and the blessed, the patriots and the enemy, the rich and the poor. They insist that extinguishing lives in foreign wars or in our prison complexes is a form of human progress. They cannot see that a child suffering in Gaza or a child in the blighted pockets of Washington, D.C. diminishes and impoverishes us all. They are deaf, dumb, and blind to hope. Those addicted to power, blinded by self-congratulatory thoughts, cannot decipher the words of hope any more than most of us can decipher hieroglyphics. Hope to Wall Street bankers and politicians, to the masters of war and commerce, is not practical. It is gibberish. It means nothing to them. Hope? Who cares? They've got power and money, and they control everything. They control the media. They control politicians. Why do they need hope? I cannot promise you anything will be better if you commit yourself to self-actualization. But I will say this, any act of rebellion, any physical defiance, nonviolently, of those who make war, of those who perpetuate corporate greed and are responsible for state crimes, anything that seeks to draw the good to the good, nourishes our souls and holds out the possibility that we can touch and transform the souls of others. Hope affirms that which we must affirm, and every act that imparts hope is a victory in itself. Chris Hedges, back in a moment. Nice to have you with us, everyone. I'm Gary Nall. One-stop shopping for all those people who still have enough gray matter left in the brain to appreciate all the complexities of life, and that's what we take on here. Joining me in studio in a moment, Howard Robbins, and on the telephone, a lot of individuals. Our lines are packed. In studio, our program director, Kara Lee. Hi, Kara.
Good afternoon, Gary. Well, I know we've got a jam-packed show, so I'll try to be as quick as possible, but I got a couple interesting emails this weekend, and I thought I would just come in and share a couple of them. The first one starts off with this woman, and she was saying that yesterday night, her 17-year-old son and her husband were returning from a Thanksgiving dinner party, and they were driving up Riverside Drive around 11:30 at night, and as they were parking their car, they heard somebody shouting, something along the lines of, "You shouldn't encourage these people, they're not welcome around here." And so the son got out of the car and he walks around the corner and he sees this guy handing out sleeping bags to homeless people. And he wonders why they were not in shelters. And as the family walks by, they said that the person who was giving out sleeping bags looked a lot like you. She sent this note along, she said, "Don't you know that by giving out sleeping bags you're encouraging crime in this neighborhood, and there's already plenty of room in shelters for them."
Jesus. Let me just address this in a way maybe this person would understand, whoever they are. There are not enough spaces in the shelters of New York for even one-tenth of the people that require them. Many of the shelters are rife with crime. There's a lot of sexual harassment. I've interviewed dozens, hundreds of individuals. People do not voluntarily go out on a cold night to sleep in a park with the hopes that they will not be mugged by other people. They do so because they have no other option. If we cannot understand how to be compassionate for those who have the least, then what are we? If all a person can do is look at their own world as if it's their neighborhood, now maybe I miss something, but the Upper West Side is not the exclusive, privileged sanctuary of those who live there. And a park is a park for all people, rich or poor, at least till now. This is not Beverly Hills, where the police will actually stop you if you're walking on one of their streets, unless you can show that you live in one of the houses there. New York has prided itself, and New Yorkers pride themselves, on having open minds and warm hearts. So for that person and their son, who can't understand what it is, to imagine what would they be like if they had no warmth on a cold night. Would they just walk by these people? Would they say, get out of my neighborhood, you don't belong? That shows that someone may be very successful in order to live on the Upper West Side. But that success has blocked their spiritual connection to those who could use kindness. And what would happen if it was that person's son who was seeking some comfort? There's been no increase in crime because of homelessness. And homeless people do not suddenly get the word that someone's doing something kind and rush there. Most homeless people are depressed. Most don't communicate with other people. They tend to be alone. So that's how I would address that issue.
Thanks, Gary. And one last one before I get out of here. It's a really simple one from a man named Bob. He said that he used to eat at your restaurant Fertile Earth every night. He still remembers your tofu Orleans and your crown of broccoli. He says he misses your dishes and wants to know when, if you're going to open up a new restaurant.
If I were not as busy as I am with my current projects, I would have opened up a gourmet vegan restaurant some time ago. I'm finishing some very important investigations, documentaries, and books. Once those are done within the next year, I may then decide, as just as a place for those who want that kind of food I used to serve. I had the first gourmet vegetarian restaurant in America, the Fertile Earth, and it was also the center of all anti-war activity. I mean, every night the Berrigan brothers, everybody who was doing anything in the anti-war movement, would go there. You could get a whole meal organic for $2.50. I made it so that even the poorest could get, and a lot of the people who were protesting were students and others, and they weren't wealthy. But it was a wonderful meeting place. There'd be 400 or 500 people a night hanging out there, 7 nights a week. So I miss that environment. And if someone could remember my tofu Orleans and my crown of broccoli, I'd make a basket where I put broccoli around the base and then cauliflower, and then asparagus. In other words, I made like a crown, like a pyramid, with each layer being different vegetables. So it'd be like 9 different vegetables, and then I would pour 4 different sauces over it. And for $2.50, 3 people, that would be a whole meal. So sooner or later, I will come back to that. All right?
Thanks, Gary.
Okay. Nice to have you all with us today. Now for the remainder of our program, we're going to hear from people who count. These are people that the media will not speak with. These are people that science journals will not care about. They'll say they're all anecdotal, but every single person that walks into any doctor's office to get treatment is anecdotal, and they count. Otherwise, then you should have to stop all of medicine in America. Because if a doctor says, how you doing, and you say, not doing well, got to change this, doing great, that's feedback. But we have a little more than that. We have people who had illnesses and today have made either major improvements or no longer have those illnesses. And these are people, the majority of whom, have been in the hands of orthodox medicine and it failed them. One more reason why, in a free society, freedom of choice should also be acceptable in healthcare. In studio right now is Howard Robbins. Hi, Howard.
Hello, Gary. Great to be here again.
Howard, we got some of your patients on the line.
Oh, very good.
And we have some people who are seeing Pat Duncanson and Lou Ann Panessi. So I'm just going to go over and just start talking with people. Let's start right at the top of the list. Let's start with Terry. Hi, Terry.
No.
Terry, are you there?
Yes, I am. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Terry, what condition did you have?
I have fibroids.
Fibroids. And what has been your success? I don't need to know your therapy or protocol. I know those because most of them are my own that they're using. I need to know what has been the results. What improvement has happened?
Well, it has been a change. They have shrunk, and so I'm quite pleased with that. Also, a lot more active, a lot healthier than what I was before I started the protocol.
How much have they shrunk?
I would say maybe like a centimeter.
That's a rather substantial improvement. Thank you very much, Terry.
Thank you.
Lawrence, how are you?
Hello.
Lawrence, what condition did you have?
I had a tumor in my testicle.
And what were your doctors going to do?
They were going to cut it out. They said, you know, just cut it out. You'll be fine. Remove your testicle.
Did they tell you there were any other ways of reversing it or improving it or saving it?
Not at all, no.
So,
no, when I told them what I was going to do, they thought I was insane.
So you were told you had tumor in your testicle, you were going to have to be castrated, there was no other option, is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay, you went on a protocol.
Yes.
All right, how's the condition today? Do you still have your testicle?
Still have both testicles, it's 10 years later, I'm in the best physical health I've ever been. The tumor shrunk about 50% and stabilized at that point. There's no, any blood test I take, any tumor marker, any other test I take indicates that I'm perfectly healthy. There's no presence of cancer or anything.
Okay, so we saved a testicle and reversed some cancer.
That's right.
And
turned my life around in the process.
Well, good. Glad to hear that. Okay, thank you very much, Lawrence.
Thank you.
I remember seeing him. It's a long time ago. Let's say hello to Glenn. Hi, Glenn.
Yeah, hi, Gary.
What condition did you have?
I was involved in a fire in 98, and which caused my aorta to rupture. And so I had to have surgery. And the surgery was, the doctor gave me zero chance of survival because it had ruptured. And so I made it through the surgery, and then I started to use your protocols. And right now, I'm in perfect health.
Perfect health.
Mm-hmm.
And what did the doctor say?
Just keep on doing what you're doing.
But they didn't want to know what you were doing?
No.
I've heard that before. Good that you're alive, but we don't want to know why you're alive or what you've done. Okay.
No, exactly.
So would you say that you had a chance of dying?
Prior to that, yes, I had a chance of dying, but I had to go through the surgery a second time. They called me back in, and I went through this similar surgery again. But mind you, the doctor, one of the doctors, I explained to him that I was seeing you and going by your protocols, and he said to me, well, he said, I do listen to Gary from time to time, and he is the most credible alternative doctor that I know of. He said, continue to do whatever he tells you.
Okay, Glenn. Thank you. Good luck.
Well, thank you, Gary.
And let's say hello to, is it Markley?
I had a feeling that might get you. Markley, yes. And I wanted to talk about my daughter, Isabella,
okay,
who happens to have Down syndrome. She's 8 years old, and she would tell you herself, except she's in school with other children, a typical school. And when she was born in a hospital in Connecticut, they basically were a lot of sad faces, and they told me that she had a hole in her heart, and that she would unfortunately, you know, have problems growing up, and that she would not be able to function in a regular school past kindergarten, and all of this old, outdated, negative information. And then there was one doctor who actually said she has unlimited potential, which really means nothing except that it meant that I was going to take that and run with it. And basically, she could do whatever she wanted to do, and there were no limitations. None of the old paradigms from before. We did a multifaceted approach, including vitamin therapy, oral motor therapy, using magnetic mattress pads, horseback riding for sensory, hyperbaric chamber, no vaccines, and her IQ is in the normal range. She is around the 40 percentile in height and 50 percentile in weight, which, again, the outdated forms they gave me when she was born told me that she wouldn't grow to be any taller than 4'6" as an adult. Her brother has been a huge asset, of course. And as I said, this is a synergistic approach to her health, which includes vitamin therapy, oral motor therapy, eating organic, healthy food. This child's favorite food is broccoli and blueberries. We also included cranial sacral therapy. She's 8 years old. She's in a typical school. And when I did take her to the well care checkups with the pediatrician, we always had a little fight, and the arms were folded, and I was the nut that didn't want her to have the vaccines. At 2 months old, when I went in with her, they told me that she...
I just lost the audio on this. Sorry. Go ahead.
As we've gone on, they have seen how healthy she is, and so I get less questioning about it. And actually, the last time we went to the pediatrician, she was ecstatic because my daughter, you know, was reading for her, carrying on a conversation with her, and she really could not believe how well she's doing. And it's all a combination of all these therapies, you know, just a great approach, and organic food and vitamins. And the other morning we had a conversation, and she said to me, you know, that she was 8 and she was excited about her 9th birthday coming up. And she said, "Mom, tell me your age." And I said, "Well, I'm getting older." And she said, "You're not getting older. You eat blueberries." So I thought that was interesting that she really knows the correlation between blueberries and really Alzheimer's and plaque on the brain, because we talk about this all the time. One of the things people with Down syndrome have a propensity for is early Alzheimer's. And certain foods, like blueberries, are amazing. And, you know, we've just researched, and it's made a huge difference.
Well, Mark Lee, we thank you very much for sharing that. Appreciate it. Let's say hello to Ida. Hi, Ida.
Thank you very much for letting me speak about my problems, or problem. I will say that I have hope, as you had said, or I wouldn't have recovered as I did. I had rheumatoid arthritis, and it was so bad, my fingers were swollen, I couldn't walk, and my knees were really swollen. So people said, "Well, go to a rheumatologist," and I went there. They didn't know what to do, and they were going to give me some, I guess it was some kind of injection.
Cortisone.
Pardon me?
Probably cortisone.
Cortisone, that's exactly what it was, and I couldn't take that. I said, "No, I don't want this." And then for my fingers, they were going to give me a wax bath to put in, and didn't help. So I finally decided I am going. I've heard your program a million times, and I contacted Luann Benisi, and she gave me the protocol, and I've been on the protocol. I have no pain whatsoever. Everything is gone. My fingers are beautiful. I can walk miles. And I will tell you that the really funny thing that happened to me is that I have been doing yoga at home. I have my own practice. And I did a balance pose and fell and injured my arm. But now it's healing beautifully because I'm on protocol and so forth. That is really amazing. So I am in very good shape. And I want to thank you very much. So just never give up hope, because I never have.
Thank you, Ida.
You're welcome. Thank you very much.
Jackie, your turn.
And about the success that I had with ozone therapy.
What was your condition?
I had an autoimmune disease. It was polymyositis, and it had caused me extreme fatigue and joint pain to the point that I was pretty much bedridden all the time. And after years of suffering, I never gave up searching for something that would help. And when I had discovered about ozone therapy, I gave it a try. And I know everyone's different, but I started to get immediate results when I started ozone therapy. I had more energy. My joint pain started to go away. And because of ozone therapy, my autoimmune disease went into remission now for, it's been about 2 years, and all my blood work is normal, and I feel wonderful. Yeah, ozone therapy really saved my life.
Thank you, Jackie. Let's say hello to Leah. Leah?
This is Leah. How are you?
Good.
I'm calling just to let you know that I've used ozone therapy for upper respiratory infections and head colds several times, and I've had immediate success with them. And I'm getting less colds now, and it's just really been a wonderful experience for me that I, you know, that I'm able to feel a lot healthier.
Good. Thank you. Ben. Your turn, Ben.
Good afternoon to you guys.
Hi.
Hello.
What was your condition?
Hashimoto's thyroiditis.
And what is it? What has changed today?
Well, what would have changed with the therapy that I'm on has changed where my TSH is now back to normal. And I feel now more energy. I feel more alive. I feel as a cleaner person is what I feel now. I feel a new person.
So it's made a difference.
Oh, without a doubt. It significantly has, I would think, removed, like, bacterial pathogens from my blood, actually. So I feel a lot better. I feel, again, my TSH was at 800, which was very high. Now it's at about 2.5. So it has normalized my thyroid. So the Hashimoto thyroiditis has gone into remission, and it's been about 2 years now where my thyroid has been free of any problems.
Okay. Thank you very much, Ben. Eric, your turn.
I had Lyme disease. I still have it slightly.
Okay.
And I started ozone treatment about a year and a half ago. And I had fatigue. I slept a lot. I was very tired after any kind of physical activity or exertion, even around the house. And little by little, my energy has come back, big time. I now have more energy, I would say, than most of the people I know. I need very little sleep, and I feel great, and I'm extremely happy.
Thank you very much, Eric. Sharon, your turn.
Hi, I also had Lyme's disease. I went to a regular doctor who put me on all different antibiotics, and as soon as I would come off the antibiotics, I would start feeling really bad again, or actually didn't make me feel good at all. And I started doing ozone therapy, and in 3 months I was out of bed again. I was able to get myself to the doctor, and I have real quality of life now with a combination of ozone therapy, diet, and supplements.
Good. Thank you, Sharon. Rod.
I was also suffering from Lyme disease and had to go on oral antibiotics for over a year, and it was wreaking havoc on my digestive system, my overall everything. And I went to my doctor, and I said, I can't do this anymore. You need to tell me what else I can do. He said, well, you need to look into this ozone therapy. And when I did, I was skeptical at first, but after the first several treatments, I really started to feel a difference very shortly. And it really took away a lot of the joint pain and the headaches that I was having. And being off the antibiotics, I started recovering from those symptoms from being on those for such a long time, like gastrointestinal tract problems from that. And my Lyme symptoms just started to go away after a couple months. And I went for a follow-up visit with the Lyme specialist and tested my blood and everything, and I wasn't having any positive advance for the Lyme disease anymore. And it really just took care of it where the antibiotics for over a year couldn't. So it was a great savior for me.
Good. Thank you. And one last one, Keith. Hi, Keith.
Hi, Gary. How are you?
Good. What condition did you have?
I had stage 1 kidney disease, and my liver.
And what is the status today?
Great. So no more kidney. The kidney is improved, and the liver is clean now. from the formula that I got from Ms. Dempinson.
Excellent.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
All the best to you. Okay, those are some quick snippets of individuals who have made improvements using natural non-toxic therapies. What's amazing is how many physicians I receive calls from to help them or their immediate family. In fact, a physician and his wife, who's also a physician, are attending our Wednesday night Healing the Brain Naturally workshop. It's a health support group for 3 months. And he said, if I see an improvement in this, I can promise you I will be advocating this type of lifestyle, which is not medical. It's purely lifestyle, to my patients. If only the rest of medicine were as open-minded and progressive in their thoughts. But most doctors are not progressive. They're regressive. They're basing a therapy upon a model that is outdated. But then again, most of American medicine is outdated and needs to change. And I commend the probably 6,000 to 7,000, which is under, give you an idea, it's under 1% of American medicine practices complementary medicine. Howard Robbins, a longtime friend, is in studio, and he is one who uses the ozone along with dietary approaches and that we've gone over many years on individuals who've been able to make recoveries where otherwise they wouldn't have. Howard, how many people have you seen helped with conditions like hepatitis B, C, herpes, 1, 2, and 6? Herpes 6 is the most lethal herpes. That's one that can kill you. AIDS-defining illnesses and conditions that like chronic fatigue syndrome.
Well, literally, Gary, thousands. Everybody virtually that's ever come in and followed the protocols, and the protocols aren't just ozone therapy. That may work in some people very well, but when you combine them with your protocols and all the nutritional things they can do as well and lifestyle change, that's when you see major breakthroughs in people, and very rapidly, where people have suffered for years, suddenly they grow well in a very, very short time. So when we put it all together holistically, that's what really makes the difference. I don't like to put all our eggs in just one basket.
Also, for people in the audience, if you know anyone who is suffering from Gulf War syndrome or any of the conditions attributed to 9/11 exposure, Howard and I have been working with individuals for some time. And in fact, in one of the films, you actually see a New York City firefighter who was on permanent disability because he was one of the first responders at 9/11, developed massive inflammation in his lungs, was incapacitated, went on a protocol, and a year later, we filmed him going back into the fire department and getting back on a truck. He is totally normal today. Also, we took a Gulf War syndrome woman, Jazz was her name.
Yes.
And I remember the first time she came in the office, she had these very, very baggy pants on. I mean, excessively baggy. It was clear that they were, you know, she was very petite, but they were like a big man's pants, extra large, that she'd taken in the waist. And then when I saw her, I saw that her leg filled out the entire pants. Her calves were the size of basketballs. She had skin that was so stretched it was splitting. That was from being exposed to the Gulf War theater contaminants, probably the some form of gas that was used, as well as the vaccines, etc. We got her back her health. And
that was amazing. Jazz is an amazing story. She comes in now. She looks wonderful. Really, really young and healthy and attractive.
And she couldn't have a relationship because she said she was afraid that what she had was infectious. And she didn't want to infect any potential, you know, partner. But now she has a healthy relationship because she is healthy.
Now, remember the two Johns, Big John and Little John. They were the firefighters. Big John was buried for 2 hours. He was one of the few firefighters they were able to rescue.
Yeah.
And it took us, between your protocols and what I was doing, just months. And they got rid of all their lung problems and got well. So if anybody knows firefighters that are out there that were first responders, remember, I treat them for free.
Yeah, these, and we treated all Gulf War vets for free. And right. If you remember, at the Healing Center, we treated over 1,000 individuals with AIDS-defining illnesses for free.
no one dies from AIDS. That's amazing. That anybody, all the money that goes into AIDS research.
Well, let's deal with that on another. They die absolutely from AIDS-defining illnesses, but we'll talk about that on another show.
Okay.
Howard Robbins. Howard, what's your number if anyone wants to reach out to you?
If anybody has any questions, feel free to call me at 212-581-0101. That's 212-581-0101.
Good, thank you. And also up on the internet, aside from some wonderful recipes, because people say, I want to get started, I don't know how to prepare food, I don't know how to prepare raw food or cook food. Most people just go out and buy food or someone's made it for them. So I took the best recipes from that I have, photographed them, and put them up there. They're free. It's a public service, so you can download them. You can go to progressiveradionetwork.com or GaryNall.com. You can download them. But also there's a little video up there called You Can Believe in Miracles, and you'll see people who we help reverse their end-stage Alzheimer's and diabetes, all kinds of illnesses. And these are people uncoached in their own words. We have 1,600 testimonials filmed. I only put about 12 up there. And yet not once will you ever have the American media ever be honest and approach and say, we'd like to see how this woman who had end-stage Alzheimer's, or this man, Kenny from New Jersey, who was a plumber and had end-stage multiple sclerosis, how they reverse that. Because they can't. If they dared at the New York Times or Post or anybody else, if they ever dared to be honest, then they'd be going up against the medical paradigm, and they are advertisers. So they always have to put this in the negative context. Well, couldn't be. They must have had placebo, spontaneous remission. Okay, think of a spontaneous remission. Did any of these things happen? Why don't you show me any doctor on the planet that's ever had a spontaneous remission? Show me one with Alzheimer's. Just one. You can't, because it doesn't exist. What we do isn't based upon placebo or miracles or suddenly finding God. It's based upon simple cause and effect. And they refuse to accept that. That's why this afternoon I'm going to do a very powerful commentary on living in delusion. You won't want to miss that. In studio is the person who you don't see her on camera, but she's responsible for all these wonderful award-winning documentaries we do on socially relevant themes, including our current one that we're finishing up on Poverty, Inc. and on Greed Street and Death by Medicine, which is now done, Valerie Van Cleve. Hi, Valerie.
Hi, Gary.
Now, we're filming this week and next week, and we want to get people in the audience engaged in it.
Yes, we do, and we need several different people. We're looking for a family that's been affected by the recession, depression, downturn that we're in now, that's perhaps lost their jobs, their home, be able to videotape them. We're looking for students who are affected, who can't find work, who can't finish their education. We're looking for elderly couples, elderly people, who perhaps lost their pensions and are also feeling the effects of the downturn, and also any businesses that might have failed, have gone bankrupt. And we'd love to come and videotape you and have you in this very important documentary.
Good. Give me your phone number.
The phone number is 646-926-5441. That's Valerie at 646-926-5441.
Thank you, Valerie. We're coming up to the end of this program. Again, this afternoon at 3 o'clock, you can go over the internet and watch and listen to a very important program, an outstanding guest, and a lot of issues that are relevant to us all today by going to progressiveradionetwork.com. If you forget that, just go to GaryNall.com. In this Poverty, Inc., I'm taking on two major institutions that hitherto have not been challenged, not on The Insider and all the other documentaries done on the scripts on Wall Street, hedge funds and equity buyout partnerships. These are the organizations that have caused massive unemployment, massive shifts in the economy. They provide nothing of value to society. They're just purely parasitic. And so we're filming them, plus ethicists, psychologists, sociologists, and also those people who have been directly affected. The old poor, meaning those who have historically been poor, and the new poor. So it's going to be something to watch. We're out of time. Thank you all very much. I look forward to sharing more on our next program. Have a nice day.
Our New York City studios. The producer is Richard Gale. The engineer is Matt Bogart. All shows are archived by Joe Kemp. Our chief archivist is Sharon Pride, and the program director is Carol Lee.